And now we'll have Dr. George Villadis from Georgia.
Thank you very much. I think the last two speakers have done a wonderful job of setting the stage for my presentation. And keeping along with the Israeli theme, I'd like to for you to acknowledge that I do have Israelis in this paper, and we talk a lot about Israel towards the end of the presentation. Carolyn, if you don't have Israelis on your paper, you might want to leave now. So, what I want to do with this presentation is tell you about a variable rate irrigation solution that my team has been developing over the years, focused on center pivots, and tell you now how we're thinking about taking it to the, sort of the next level. So I'm going to start with a little bit of background about the work we've been doing. Just to introduce myself, I'm a professor at the University of Georgia. My background is in ag engineering, but I'm currently in the crop and soil science department. Some of this work that I'll be discussing today is on my website if you'd like to visit it. I also have a Twitter account where we try to put the latest news. So you know what got us going on variable rate irrigation in a big way was that we saw it in the southeastern United States that there was a lot of variability in soil moisture inside fields. So our group saw this very early on, and here are four graphs. The y-axis is soil water tension or soil water potential. I have it in terms of tension, so dryers up to the top of the graph. And so here are four snapshots from four different nodes in this fairly large corn field from Georgia. And the field is being irrigated uniformly with a pivot, and you can see that's pretty dramatic differences in how dry the soil has got in this different part of the field. The interesting thing, and I'll try to use the mouse since this is being recorded, that this center of the field where nodes 7 and 3 are located, so here's nodes 7 and 3, is what this farmer told us was the most productive part of the field. And during enthesis and filling of the corn, it was the driest part of the field. And we all know that you lose yield potential when you are at such high soil water potentials in the field. So this spurred us to start thinking about how we can apply variable rate irrigation to the field. And our team was one of the first to develop the variable rate irrigation technology for for pivots, which has now been commercialized. So we developed the pivot, and those of you who are mostly focused on drip irrigation, I have this little schematic in here to show you what a center pivot does that has variable rate irrigation. Essentially, the sprinklers are modulated so that the rates change over different features of the landscape. But to get to the next step, I think we need to start thinking about dynamic variable rate irrigation. And that means responding to water to soil moisture conditions in real time. And so you've heard about this concept quite a bit in the last two presentations. But for pivots, it's a little bit different because the scale is pretty big. So here in the middle of this, what I call a dashboard, is what we see the prescription map for a variable rate irrigation pivot. The different colors represent different irrigation management zones. How you define these is a little bit difficult. I'll address that in a minute. The little yellow circles represent soil moisture sensing units that are out there. So the idea is that you have these zones that are fairly uniform. You have soil moisture sensors there that are sensing the soil. The data flows to some decision support tool. The decision support tool, in the morning when you wake up and you turn on your phone, you see these irrigation recommendations that tell you how much water to apply to each of the zones. You say approve and download, and the controller on the pivot is doing this basically. So we're very close to having this occurring. My research group has got this working. I think a couple of the big pivot companies are thinking about this. I think Lindsay's pretty close to offering it already in the U.S. So this is not too far pie in the sky. It's actually pretty reasonable. But to truly achieve what I've described to you, you need three things, in my opinion. And I already told you we have VRI available. Okay, so that's commercially available. We need to be able to develop irrigation management zones. And I think that's more of an art than a science at this point. I mean, all kinds of people are developing algorithms of how you can combine data. But I have found by applying those that they are very transient. So you can get good management zones for this year, but next year they don't work. And then we need high-density, low-cost sensing systems. And I want to give you just a quick summary of some of the solutions we've developed before I start moving into what we'll be doing in the future. So irrigation management zones are important. In our landscape, we found Two things are very important in making these zones effective. One is soil electrical conductivity, which we all know and love. And the other one is elevation. So in many parts of the world, we don't have good LIDAR data sets. But we have found that we can extract very accurate elevation data from RTK data that people are storing in their trackers as they're using AutoSteer to do all these farm operations routinely now. So then we can extract that data and build hydrography layers in the GIS, which shows us which way the water is flowing and accumulating in these landscapes. And that's very important to understand when it rains, where your water is going to be flowing and how you can then strategize to put less water in those areas where the water accumulates. And it may be small for you to see in the back of the room, but here we have a hydrography layer on top of a Google Earth image, and you can see where these flow paths are coinciding. You have the dark spots where you have the accumulation of the organic matter because it just stays wetter. So that seems to be working for us. A couple of years ago, one of my former master students developed something that's kind of like MZA that many of us use, but this is an online tool that allows you to use only one variable to create management zones, but the good thing is that it lets you extract the data in shapefiles so that you can import it directly into a GIS instead of having to further process the information. So the URL is here if you want to visit it somewhere down the line. And then to talk about the sensing systems, because with the systems that were on the market when we began this effort, we couldn't afford to put many in the field, and the farmers wouldn't allow us to put many in the field because they're intrusive. So we tried to develop a new system that was a little bit more friendly to what we wanted to do and has these characteristics you see here. I'm going to show you a couple of photos just to be able to summarize it. Essentially, we took the old watermark sensors that have been on the market for decades, and we put them together in a probe, as you see here in the middle photograph, so that the probe can be customized to different rooting depths. And then we build the telemetry that allows us to send this data back, and I'll show you how that works in just a minute. One of the cool things that we incorporated was just to put a spring under this antenna here so that when a tractor or a sprayer comes by, the antenna just flips over. So the telemetry type solution we're using requires the antenna to be above the canopy, and that's why we needed to have the ability to flip over. But we can put as many of these as we want in the field, and it's not intrusive at all. The farmer goes right over them. Occasionally, one gets hung up on a sprayer that's down very low, but it's very, very rare that we have any kind of problems with these. The telemetry solution is a mesh network solution, so all the data from the individual sensor nodes go back to a gateway station, and there's a cell modem that sends it to the web, and that seems to work reliably, except when we have a lot of lightning strikes, and then our mesh radios tend to fail. So that might not be the optimal long-term solution for commercialization. We have some visualization tools. So here's one of our cooperating farmers looking at the data on his phone. So that works well. We also have a decision support tool that converts the soil water tension data into actionable irrigation amounts. So it uses the Van Genuchten method. So we can get some coarse soil properties from the USDS NRCS database and run the Van Genuchten method and create the soil water retention curve, basically. So we can translate soil water tension into actionable irrigation amounts. And this is done all automatically. So our data flow from the field to our server hourly, and this is updated hourly. So you could change your prescription pretty much on the hour if you wanted to. So we've been trying to demonstrate whether this works, right? So it's nice to have all this stuff created. So we've convinced a few farmers to be our guinea pigs, and we've taken this parallel strip approach, as many of us in Precision Ag are doing. So here you see a field where we've divided it up into parallel VRI versus conventional strips. And because of the VRI enabled pivot, we can just, you know, we can put the prescriptions on at will. So in this case, in the dynamic VRI strips, for example, over here, you can't see these numbers, I'm sorry, because it's small on the screen, but essentially you can see that each one of these little management zones here has its own prescription amount. And this gets downloaded to the pivot remotely and automatically. And when the farmer engages the pivot, he's putting on the uniform rate on these strips that he wants, and he's putting on our prescriptions on each one of these smaller management zones. And so that happens pretty automatically. So we do it the updates once a day. So in this case, it takes about 3 days for the pivot to cover this field. It's a large field. The prescription is downloaded once a day. And here's a short video of how this that particular field looks. So you'll be able to see that we have the sprinklers off over some areas that are non-farmed, and you can see some zones that are off and on that are cycling here as we go through. Our biggest problem actually has been the maintenance of the VRI itself. We have the valves on the VRI system that just seem to constantly malfunction, and so if we're not alert, we could cause the farmer problems. And this year we actually had a failure where we didn't notice for a few days that one of the zones wasn't functioning properly, and we have a nice low NDVI circle in our field. Very unfortunate. But anyway, that's the way it goes. So we've been comparing the yields. So this is being done in peanuts. We don't have a commercial peanut yield monitor, so we don't have a yield map to show you. So what we've been doing is harvesting these strips and then comparing the mass of peanuts harvested for each strip, and then calculating the yields from that way. So what's interesting is that in this field in 2015, the field is wetter from this side and gets drier on this side. So you can see that our dynamic VRI system actually outperformed in yield the farmer on this side of the field, but the farmer quite a bit outperformed us on this side of the field. And I want you to remember that it's drier on this side of the field, and that this farmer is a really very good manager. In fact, he's not just putting on any amount of water that he wants. He's using a crop growth model that was developed by USDA to schedule irrigation. And this model is really interesting because peanuts are a finicky crop. They're a crop that requires a lot of management. And sometimes it has been found that you actually irrigate the ground to lower soil temperature so that the peanuts can actually start producing the seed. So I'll describe that in just a minute in more length. But it's interesting to see that our irrigation water use efficiency was about 43% higher. So overall the yields were the same in this field, but we had a much higher irrigation water use efficiency. But in all honesty, the irrigation amounts were not that different because this was a sort of normal precipitation year. So the irrigation was truly supplemental. Repeated it in 2016 in a different field, okay? So this was a very dry, very hot year, almost no precipitation. We had to apply a lot of water. And what you see here is that the yields were much higher this year, so much higher yields overall. In fact, the yields in this field were about 2,000 kilograms per hectare higher than the state irrigated yields in Georgia for 2016. But you'll also notice that our yields in the dynamic VRI were much lower than the farmer's yields, okay? So because this guy's willing to be a guinea pig, he tolerated this and didn't send us a bill for the difference, because it is a financial loss. So we were wondering why that happened. Again, we have better irrigation water use efficiency, but something happened there for these big yields to be the yield difference to be such high. And I'll explain that to you again in a minute. We're doing this again in 2017. Now we've got a little bit more funding, so we're repeating this across many crops. So we have peanut, cotton, corn going on this year. But let me go back and tell you why we have some problems. We think that we need to improve the criteria for triggering irrigation. So our system right now, we're using a fixed soil water potential. We say, okay, 50 kilopascals, that's what we're going to irrigate on. And if we're not there, you know, we don't irrigate. And if the farmer decides to irrigate and we have to go ahead and irrigate, we just add irrigation to bring it up to 75% of field capacity. We're not using any phenology to determine when to irrigate. So I think that's the criteria we need to incorporate here. It's like, okay, when does the plant need different treatment to do this? So there are a number of ways to do this. You know, canopy temperature sensing is important. You've heard about this in the previous presentations. These are two images that Victor and Yafit have shared with me from some work done in Israel where they're doing mild irrigation treatments on potato here, and in the RGB image you really can't see much difference, but in the thermal image you can see. So we think canopy temperature is a way to do this for some crops. Crop growth models is also an approach. So specifically back to Irrigator Pro and why we think our yields were so much lower. So in 2016, the farmer triggered irrigation four times to lower soil temperature, okay? At that point, in most of our zones, we had adequate soil moisture at depth, and so we didn't irrigate. So when the peanuts were flowering and they send their pegs into the soil, in our dynamic VRI zones, basically they were burning up because the soil temperature was too high. Okay, so that's why I'm saying crop growth models can be a very important parameter, not just a crop coefficient factor, not just case NDVIs, but actually what's happening with the phenology. So we work with ARS on this model, and now I don't know if you can see this in the yellow block down here, but actually we can take our soil moisture data from our system and send it directly into this model, and it'll generate recommendations on irrigation. It generates only yes, no, tells you to irrigate for temperature or to irrigate for moisture, but it doesn't tell you how much to apply. So how do we improve dynamic VRI? So right now, most people who are using VRI are using static management zones. Okay, so what happens is a farmer works with the irrigation supplier, they create a prescription map like you see on the left side of the slide, based on the farmer's experience and the soil types, maybe elevation, and then that prescription stays constant from then on. So the farmer may adjust from year to year slightly how much the farmer applies to each zone, but it's going to be just like you see here. From now on, it's going to be 100% in this zone, 80% in this zone, and so maybe the what represents 100% changes from irrigation event to irrigation event, but the proportion doesn't change. I think we need to create dynamic irrigation management zones. In other words, zones whose boundaries change over time. Both my group and our colleagues in Israel have seen this with data they've collected, that actually the boundaries of these zones seem to be shifting during the year, during the growing season, and from year to year, depending on the weather conditions, the crop you've got it growing, and other parameters that affect crop growth. So for one approach to do this is to use temperature readings of a canopy to develop a crop water stress index relationship, so then you can calibrate back to leaf water potential or stem potential that we heard about before. Dr. John Snyder, who's part of the team here at the University of Georgia, has been doing this effectively for cotton in the southeast. So this is a big achievement because we've always thought that because of the humidity in the atmosphere in the southeast, we couldn't achieve a crop water stress index that was reliable. But actually, John's done that. So he's got this published. You see he's got a very nice crop water stress index curve here on the right of the slide. And we can now reliably predict leaf water potential from canopy temperatures on cotton in the southeast, and he's working on peanuts as well. These are some maps from Israel, from cotton as well, and what's interesting to see is that the colors indicate uniform canopy temperatures. So you can see that in this particular field, on both of these fields, the areas where you had uniform canopy temperatures are shifting. Right, so these crops are getting irrigated, so different irrigation treatments at different spots, but the patterns are shifting. Okay, so this is what we're saying, that the pattern, so it may be a factor of how well the crop grows. So if you've got a plant that's growing excessively well here, not so well here, it may be using more water and becoming more deficient. Okay, thank you. So to wrap up, I want to tell you about, is that till I'm done or till 20 minutes? Till I'm done, okay. So I want to tell you a little bit about a new project that we've got going. This project is starting next month, and you can see it's a multinational project. We have partners from the ARO in Israel and the Hebrew University, as well as the University of Georgia. And our goals here are to try and understand how we can do this temporal irrigation management zone adjustment. So we want to use some true and tried techniques like thermal imaging of canopies, and then link it to some novel technologies to see if we can achieve this. So you can see our objectives here. I don't want to go through all of these. But our approach is going to be on-farm research. In the USA, we're going to be using pivots. In Israel, they're going to be using drip irrigated fields. We're going to be using a parallel strip design. And then we're going to be using thermal imaging to delineate irrigation management zones after canopy closure for cotton. So this is on cotton. So in Israel, they have a very nice UAV. This is a Spanish UAV that has a FLIR thermal infrared camera. So they'll be looking from above and creating weekly thermal images. We're going to try and use a system that's being just now commercialized by Smartfield. This is a company based in Texas. And this provides an infrared camera that's mounted on a mast that allows you to rotate around in the field, so you can get snapshots continuously of this. So there are lots of things to be worked out, because obviously the angle of viewing is going to change with distance. So we're not really sure how effective this will be, but we want to try it because it's an option if you can mount it on a pivot like this for farmers to be able to use this tool long term. So we're going to use the principles that have been established by our Israeli colleagues to and by John Snyder to establish our trigger points. We're going to use the thermal images. We're going to extract the pixels. We're going to convert the thermal temperature to crop water stress index, and from that calculate leaf water potential and use that as our trigger point. And we're also going to use this to try and identify uniform errors in the field. And because we have VRI capabilities, we'll be doing doing the prescriptions pretty much in real time. A second and final objective here that I'll discuss is that we also want to use the evolving platforms with satellites and aerial images to see if traditional vegetation indices can be used for these purposes, just to make it easier, because thermal is a challenge for sure. And so finally, you know, making this truly a dynamic dashboard is our long-term goal. So we'll have transient zones, real-time data coming in, and be able for the farmer in the morning to wake up and say, yes, I've really achieved this. And I'll be glad to take a question if you have just a moment or two.
We've got time for a couple questions.
Yes.
I'd like to know if the zones were actually static and we're just not creating them correctly. Because a static property to me is soil water holding capacity of the soil. I don't believe that that's spatially variable. So what's varying temporally is the ET. So if we're actually getting them right, could we work off of static zones?
Well, so let me give you an example of in my landscape of why that doesn't hold true. So we don't have a lot of topographic relief, but we have some. And we have erosions taking place over the last 50 years. So our topsoils have eroded down to the base, to the toe slope. In a dry season, that lower part of the landscape is actually the driest part because it's very deep sands. When we have a wet season, the water table rises up, and that becomes the wettest spot. So if we're relying completely on water holding capacity, it doesn't give you the answer, right? You're still irrigating that more frequently based on water holding capacity. So that's what I'm talking about. These properties are shifting. And they may not be shifting dramatically, but the boundaries are shifting a little bit. And I think to get maximum efficiency, we need to do something that allows us to capture that. Yes, Caroline?
Just to follow on that discussion, so maybe your management should be the same, but they'll fit from season to season. So the soil available water holding capacity hasn't changed. It's just that in a drying year, you irrigate that
yes, but there's infinite permutations there. It's just not what you know, binary. I think, yeah, we'll follow up on that. But I thought that was the answer, but I don't think it's the answer anymore. Gentleman here.
Yeah, today we are talking, especially in Israel, on fertigation rather than irrigation.
Yes.
Do you take it into consideration and how?
We are choosing at this point to ignore that variable because of its complexity. but it's a factor for pivots as well, because many of our farmers who are growing corn are now using fertigation to put on small doses during the growing season. So it is a factor for us as well that we'll have to address a little bit later.
Okay.
I think I'm out of time.
Good luck.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.